Welcome back. Any questions left over from before? Alice reminded me that the word Christ is a title, and his actual name is Jesus, of course. Jesus is the name. Christ is the title. Jesus the Messiah. And someone else also mentioned about co-creation, that shall we say, cosmic sense of spirituality will include the realization that you are joining in to the creation and the redemption of the world. That it isn't just about achieving your own salvation. It's not about what kind of a person do I have to be so that when I die I will go to heaven. That would be a very limited view of our life purpose. I want to mention one last thing about fate and luck. That the goddess of luck was Tyche. And obviously our phrase lady luck was always thought of as female, because mind could change back and forth, not necessarily always one way, shall we say. And so if you were to be blessed by Tyche and you could pray to her, you could ask for luck. That's important, just as we can ask for grace. And if she did give you good luck, luck has to do with gaining more. And grace has to do with being more. That more is God. We are the way God is person. If you look at it that way. So when you were blessed by Psyche, you were required to do three things. And if you did not do these three things, you would be visited by her sister, which would be the opposite of good luck. Obviously, it would be bad luck. So it was kind of a superstitious way of looking at it. Sister's name was Nemesis. First, you had to acknowledge that the luck was not based on your own ego accomplishments. Secondly, you had to go to the temple and offer a sacrifice, which would be their way of offering prayers. Our version would be to light a candle. So their version would be like to sacrifice an animal to honor the gods. And finally, you had to give some of what you got to the poor. Those are the three requirements when you were visited with good luck. So already you can see a spiritual consciousness in the way they are doing things. Okay. So now let's go on to our other topic and our second chapter, which has to do with synchronicity. And we talked somewhat about this before, so we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, because I also want to go to our third topic, which is in chapter 5 on the feminine. Synchronicity is a word coined by Carl Jung. Chronos is the Greek word for time, as in chronometer. And the syn part means with or along with or aligned to. Occasionally, in the course of time, unusual coincidences happen that you did not cause or merit. It just happened. Remember last time we talked about the fact that sometimes something just happens and sometimes we do something. Well, this is not in the realm of doing. This is in the realm of happening. And this happening is not in our control. So we can't make coincidences happen. They come as gifts. So synchronicity is called the archetype of grace. The clearest sign of grace at work. For instance, let's say you have a terrible addiction to alcohol and you have tried various techniques and nothing has worked. Then you meet someone in a 12-step program and this person invites you to come to a meeting. And at this meeting, you have a spiritual conversion. You realize, oh, there is a way beyond this painful addiction, and it's through the steps offered by this program. That would be the unusual coincidence of meeting just the person who's in the program you need, and you, and it just happened, you didn't make it happen, and you responded, and the result was a change that made it possible for you to live out your true calling in life. Because an addiction is an interference with your calling. That's why we need a spiritual program to work with an addiction. Because it has to do with a spiritual calling that can't be fulfilled as long as you're addicted. So the coincidence not caused or merited by you could only be attributed to a power beyond yourself, also called higher power. Higher than what? Higher than ego. And there isn't anybody who hasn't had some type of synchronous experience. Unusual coincidence, not caused or merited by you, that leads to a major change. So the simplest synchronicity that applies to every single human is the moment at which your parents met. The moment at which your parents met, certainly not caused by you, and it was certainly leading to some important event, namely your birth, important to you. And there's no way to explain it. And there's no way to explain it away. It just happened. So from the point of view of those with a spiritual consciousness, we don't stop at it just happened. We go to, well, if it just happened, it's a kind of grace, a special gift that came our way that helped us find and fulfill our calling. This very birth was a calling. Your calling began then, began at your birth. Okay, questions about this first way of looking at synchronicity? So let's take a quick look at our chapter, because I have a section called Calling and Coincidence. And on page 55, I'm down toward the bottom. By meaningful coincidence, which is the definition of synchronicity, meaningful coincidence, we seem to meet those we need and those who need us seem to find us too. Our deficiencies are matchmakers. They hook us up with the people who need us and whom we need. As an example of the person who was addicted to alcohol and met someone who brought him to the program. We are compelled continually to seek those who compensate for what we lack. That's the nature of a need. I lack it, so I look for it elsewhere. And I use an example there. But to go to the bottom paragraph, there is another area in which graces sometimes do not mesh with our human choices. Grace sometimes seems forced on the recipient. Example would be Jonah. In the Bible, he refused to preach the Hebrew teaching to pagans. So he was swallowed by a whale, and the whale spit him out exactly at the place where the pagans were waiting for him. And on that page 56 is where I go into the story of Franz Jägerstätter. But I want to go down to the last paragraph on page 57. We keep noticing that graces are offered to us to advance our unique development. When we deny or refuse a grace, we limit our blooming into the tree we can be. Every event in life offers an opportunity to awaken to our destiny or to avoid it. We have regrets as we look back over our lives and realize that an opportunity, a grace, had come to us and we said no to it. We look back now and realize that our fear or misjudgment held us back. We could have advanced in wisdom or in showing more love. When we experience these regrets, these self-recriminations, that is, blaming ourselves, we might use an affirmation like this. So this is the one I recommend when you have a regret. I use this regret as a cue, C-U-E, and a spur to engage in my spiritual practices. I make amends for what I have done or failed to do when necessary or appropriate. I show more loving kindness to myself and everyone. I am thankful for all the ways my regrets can turn from curses into graces. This is how they turn into graces. So I'm using the regret as a cue that keeps me humble and returns me to my spiritual practices. If the regret is about something I didn't do or the way I hurt somebody, I make amends for that. And I make a commitment to act with more loving kindness and wisdom in the future. And finally is the gratitude. I am thankful for the grace to be able to do it this way. I think it's a wonderful affirmation because it has all the elements. You're taking the regret and not using it to shame yourself, but to return you to your real focus in life, which is your spirituality. Letting go of ego, being like Christ, and so forth. You're making up for what you didn't do. You're acting with more love and wisdom for the future, and you're showing gratitude for how your regrets didn't have to become horrible self-criticisms, but could turn into something that helps you. I was on page 57, and that's where, and I recommend that you take that one and maybe write it up in your own words. So I'm doing this now. Whenever regret comes to me, oh, I wish I had done this, or I wish I hadn't done that. Oh, how do I take this regret and use it as a guide to walk me back to my real focus in life, which is not on criticizing myself, but on appreciating that there's more left, more time left. And in this time, I want to act in ways that have more wisdom. Okay, any questions on the synchronicity topic? I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it because we have talked about it a lot in the past. And I think it's pretty well explained in the chapter. So, let's go on to grace in the feminine. So we begin with a reminder that our word grace in Latin nouns have gender. So for instance, the word for moon is luna, that's feminine. The word for sun is sol, S-O-L, and that is masculine. This word, grace, is feminine. And luck, the word for luck is also feminine. And fortune is also feminine, all because the grace, the luck, the fortune doesn't have the masculine flavor of do this so that this will happen. Make it happen by doing this. Put effort into it, and there will be a result. That is the traditional male style. Whereas, in the way we're working, the female style, this which is the style of grace and so forth, is more coming from something that's not quite so certain. It's uncertain. It does not respond to effort. You can put all the effort in the world you want. You may not receive the grace that you're asking for. It isn't based on merit. So it isn't a quid pro quo. So this puts you in a different position. Instead of being in the position of doing something in order to get something, you're in a new position, which is that of asking. So look at the very first quote. On page 58 in our chapter 5, Grace in the Feminine. And this is by Lucretius, who wrote, famous Roman writer, who wrote a book called On the Nature of Things. How interesting that he was an avowed atheist. But notice the first words of the book. It is you alone, goddess. That's the mother goddess. The goddess of all grace. It is you alone, goddess, who oversees the nature of all that is. Without you, nothing arises onto the shores of light. Be my guide in writing this poem about the way things are. And I then mention Apuleius and his book, The Golden Ass. And this is also a pagan, early pagan novel from ancient Rome. And I don't know if I have a quotation in here, but one of the things he says is, in speaking to the goddess Isis, that's the mother goddess of the ancient Egyptians, he says, "You love us so much that you would even change the course of the stars so that good things would happen to us." You would even get in there and change the astrological workings. That's how much you love us. So there's this beautiful human response to the mother. Mother nature, phrase that we use. This quote by Aurobindo, who is a Hindu teacher. When you give yourself give completely without demand, without condition, without reservation, so that all in you shall belong to the Divine Mother, and nothing left to the ego or given to any other power. The more complete your faith, sincerity, and surrender, the more will grace and protection be with you. So you don't do it for that, but you notice that more graces come your way. In fact, one of the titles of the Virgin Mary is Our Lady of Grace, Mother of Divine Grace. Now, there's something about the materialist view, which I talk about on page 61, that has a lack of trust in or suspicion about the feminine. That there's something about the feminine that... Can you still hear me okay? Yeah. There's something about the feminine that is not really trustworthy. Because it isn't scientifically based. It doesn't make its decisions on the basis of science. It seems to operate in almost a fickle way. And this accent on everything being materialistic, from my point of view, is the equivalent of something anti-feminist. So I talk about this in the chapter, and I think it's helpful to take a look at that. I'm on page 64. The scientific perspective is certainly useful in a laboratory or in research, but to relate it to all areas of human experience takes faith, since that broad an application would take tools that science does not have. How ironic that faith becomes an unrecognized tool in the materialist kit. But the feminine style of contentment with the indefinite and undefined fits with Buddhist teaching about emptiness, that everybody is connected, that there is not a separate self. So there's some type of connection between grace and the feminine. And the patriarchal style of some religions is a lack of trust in grace. Not only is it a lack of trust, it even has a more dangerous element, because it gives permission for terrible abuses of women the world over. And I use as my example the courageous statement made by President Jimmy Carter. I'm on 67. He was in the Southern Baptist Convention. And in the year 2000, he resigned from the Baptist group. And this is what he said. This is his statement when he resigned. Male religious leaders have had and still have an option to interpret holy teachings either to exalt or subjugate women. That's interesting right there. How fascinating that in Catholicism we exalt the Virgin Mary and we subjugate ordinary human women. Anyway, they have, these male religious patriarchal leaders, have for their own selfish ends, opposite of letting go of your ego, overwhelmingly chosen to subjugate women. Their continuing choice provides to subjugate women. Like, for instance, you can't be a minister, or you can't be a bishop, or you have a lower status. Provides the foundation or justification for much of the pervasive persecution and abuse of women throughout the world. People say, well, if all the religions agree that women are not equal to men, so we can go ahead and enslave them and use them in whatever way we want. This is a clear violation not only of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but also of the teachings of Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul, Moses, prophets, Muhammad, founders of other great religions, all of whom called for equitable treatment of all the children of God. It is time we had the courage to challenge these views. I thought that was a very courageous statement that he was making. So he's saying, I don't want to be part of this group anymore because of the way it treats women. This is how seriously he took this respect for the feminine. And it's the equivalent of respect for grace. I mentioned in the book an example of the giving of grace. I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but I'll just mention it again. That the Virgin Mary appeared to Saint Catherine Laboure, 19th century France, and she asked that a medal be struck showing her image in the way that St. Catherine saw her in the vision. This is called the miraculous medal, which we recall from our childhood. And in this vision and on the medal, the Virgin Mary is standing straight on. In other words, you're seeing her face to face, and she's holding her hands in the ancient pose of the pagan goddesses. Palms facing you, arms outstretched as if she were sort of inviting you to her. This is how she was pictured. She pictured herself exactly the way all the goddesses had pictured themselves. Now, on each of the 10 fingers, there was a golden ring. And from some of the rings, there were rays of golden light emanating from the fingers. And on other ones, there was no light emanating. So St. Catherine asked her, what are those rays of light coming from some of the rings? And Mary answered, those are the graces that people have asked me for, that I have given them. And then she said, well, what about the rings that don't have any light? She said, those are the graces that I want to give, but nobody has dared ask me for them. Very fascinating. We're taking it as a story, as a legend. We're not having to believe it literally, but it makes an important point, which is that we haven't yet dared to appreciate the power of the feminine in spirituality. By putting all our accent on these practices that we do, it's the male style. Do this and you'll get that. Whereas the feminine style is, come to me, be with me, let me embrace you, receive my graces, and then things will happen. That's a whole different style from, we'll do this and you'll get that. And at the time I was writing this chapter, I happened to read the poem by Thomas Merton, which I quote at the top of page 67. I want to mention this because it's so important. We recall the words of Thomas Merton in his poem to the Immaculate Virgin on a Winter Night. And this is these are the lines of the poem. Where in the world has any voice prayed to you, Lady, for the peace that's in your power? Where in the world has anyone dared to ask you for the kind of peace that you, as Queen of Peace, can give? And when I read this and wrote this, it was the beginning of the conflict in Syria, you know, the civil war and all. And I said to myself, would I actually believe that if I prayed to Mary that she could end the conflict? Do I have that kind of faith? I couldn't really say yes. I mean, I still said a prayer, but I couldn't really believe it. But this is what he's saying, yeah, she can do it. It's just that nobody ever asked her. Or at least not enough people asked. Where in the world has anybody believed you have this much power? Notice the similarity, I say, between that prayer and this passage from a Buddhist sutra. Sutra is a scripture. The bodhisattvas, the enlightened saints who try to help us, will always maintain a motherly mind consecrated to constant protection, education, and maturing of conscious beings, inviting and guiding them along on the path of all-embracing love. So it's not just in our tradition, it's in all traditions, that there's something powerful in the feminine, but no one has dared to believe it. In fact, I'm not fooled, it's the patriarchy that taught us not to believe it, because it would be the end of their controlling powers. This to me is such a fascinating feature of this whole topic of grace, that it's a feminine reality, and that in itself makes it hard to believe by those who are caught in the male materialistic style. It's hard to get it. It's hard to trust. Maybe that's a better word. You can understand it. But it's hard to trust that it's real. It takes a lot to believe that the mother, the great mother, capital G, capital M, the mother of all graces, is really there for us. This is the high point of our faith in grace. It's such a conversion, such a move toward trusting the feminine, which is the equivalent of trusting grace, that we no longer believe that everything depends on us. Question? You want to come up here, Christina? Hi.
Hi. And I'm thoroughly enjoying this book.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you. I personally believe in, I know from my own life experience that all this is real.
Good.
But recently I read a book, which actually is a documentary on the slums in India, Beyond the Beautiful Forevers. And this woman lived 4 years in the slums. And she documents actual people throughout the book. And it's absolutely hopelessness. Children killing one another. It is just the most hopeless story of survival every minute of the day. So I just try to figure out, where is grace in their lives? Why is there such... There's no way out. It seems like the whole system is against them, and there's just, they give into hopelessness. 1 year after year, it doesn't happen. So that's, how are we supposed to reconcile, you know, us sitting here and feeling so wonderful, mm-hmm. and the hopelessness affecting some really living human beings in their less blessed states?
Mm-hmm. So yes, I understand. Basically, you're reminding us that grace and light becomes obscured when the dark side or the shadow side, what Jung calls the shadow, which is the part of us that could make choices or move in the direction of on a collective level of evil. I'll give examples of this. And it's also on a personal level, it could be qualities in you that you don't consider safe to express because they're socially unacceptable. But it also has a lot of creativity in it, because shadow also refers to the parts of ourselves, including talents and gifts, that we haven't yet noticed or acknowledged. And so Christiane is bringing up one of the examples. So the collective shadow of humanity, the style of history that we keep seeing over and over again, which has the negative dimension, is genocide, which is what she just brought up, war, slavery, torture, and hate crimes, which include prejudice, economic injustice. So, at all times of history, at every moment, even now, all of these are occurring somewhere on the planet. And the opportunity for grace is for those who have not given themselves over to the dark side to be the ones who speak up and say something about all this and make some type of gesture that tries to undo it, whether it be a donation to a cause or joining the Peace Corps. The grace has to come through us. It doesn't come through the terrible things that happen. And so this is the part of the story of our topic, in which it's up to us to be the channels of the grace. Gloria?
Oh, it's all so much. On a humorous side, I think Jimmy Carter, I'm pretty sure he said when women become priests, he'd become a Catholic. I did hear that somewhere. It sounds like something he would say. I wanted to ask you about divine providence, because I've always kind of thought of that that's how I look at it. But maybe I think there may be a difference between divine providence and your calling, or fate, and what was the other one? Destiny.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, that's it.
Thank you. So I'll just say a word about providence, and I do have a quote in the book, I think, by Paul Tillich. He's a Lutheran theologian, and he describes it best. Of course, providence, pro in Latin, means forward, and provid, V-I-D, means see. Providence means to see ahead. And since it's a religious term, it's to see ahead in a kindly way. And we have interpreted it in our childhood as the Lord will provide. See, it's the same word. Lord will provide. Provide. Look ahead. God will provide no matter what. And in a more mature religious consciousness, it's not that God will provide, nor will he undo even one of the collective inclinations, the evil impulses that we keep seeing in the world. He won't undo any of that. Providence instead, in a more mature view, means nothing that happens will ever eat into or destroy our capacity to go on loving. When you see this as providence, rather than God will undo everything. The example would be in the parting of the Red Sea. Oh, he provided, he opened the sea so the chosen people could come through, and then he closed the sea over their enemies so that they would all drown. That view of providence is the childlike style. Adult style is, no matter what, you will be able to hold on to your capacity to love, to respond to grace. Okay, John?
I probably just had a grace experience. It's cool, I thought, to share.
Okay.
Talking about the feminine aspects and versus the masculine, I'm now reading an awesome book called This Changes Everything. Naomi Klein, a Canadian journalist, about the imminence of our difficulties with climate change. She speaks directly about how the Industrial Revolution, and in fact, going as far back as she's quoting Thomas Bacon about dominion over the earth, as manifestations of the masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And it just ties in with what you're saying. It's a beautiful synchronicity. And it's it tells me more and more that for this movement to succeed, we need to transform, as she is saying as well, not only from a capitalist society, but also patriarchal, to the feminine. And it's just a profound realization.
Yes.
So I hope others would enjoy reading that book too.
Thank you, John.
Sure.
And I certainly agree with you. And yeah, this is like a high point realization of what grace really calls us to. It calls us to the Great Mother, calls us to the feminine, calls us to forsake the dominator model in favor of the nurturant model. That would be the transition from the heavily masculine patriarchal style to the feminist style. Not feminist as we have to be equal to men. Jumps over that. That's totally unimportant. It's more, we need to be respected for what we offer. That's the true feminism from the spiritual point of view. Not we need to be equal. Not we want to be dominators too. That's not the true feminine. That's simply wanting to be part of the masculine and get the goodies. Move toward the feminine is trust in the feminine, trust in the nurturance, trust in the kind of providence that preserves your capacity to love so that you can fulfill your calling. Diane?
This is a little bit different, but I'm thinking of the poor people in India. I have lived in India and have a sense of it. But I visited my daughter when she served in the Peace Corps in Cote d'Ivoire, which is Ivory Coast, and spent a little bit of time in her village, and a very poor village, raising cotton and that sort of thing. But the joy and the love and the laughter that emanated from that village was just amazing. And from our standards, they should have been sad. And yet they had that capacity to go on loving. And so it's not necessarily related to economics. It's related to attitude, I think, and perceptions, and doing with what you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling us that. That really fits with what we're talking about.
Hi, my name is John.
Hi, John.
Just a question. This may be fitting as we wind up.
Yeah.
We speak here, speaking of the feminine in certainly appropriate ways, of very healthy ways, gracious ways.
Yeah.
In the masculine, perhaps in a more negative sense, how do they work together in more helpful ways or positive ways to help us realize our destiny? Mm-hmm. You know, the combination of the two, the balance of the two. Thank you.
Yes, and they work together when there's a mutual respect and an attitude of cooperation, when we have moved from dominator to partnership. Those are the elements that bring the two together so that they work together. Okay, well, our time is about up, so we will pick it up again next week. And just before we end, a reminder, if you could read chapters 6, 7, and 8. I'm sorry, 6, 7, and 9 for next time. So thank you all.